Sat by the lakeside, but such crowds gathered round him that he got into a boat and sat there, and the people all stood on the beach, and he told them many things in parables. He said, imagine a sower going out to sow. As he sowed, some seeds fell on the edge of the path, and the birds came and ate them up. Others fell on patches of rock, where they found little soil, and sprang up straight away because there was no depth of earth. But as soon as the sun came up, they were scorched, and not having any roots, they withered away. Others fell among thorns, and the thorns grew up and choked them. Others fell on rich soil, and produced their crop, some 100-fold, some 60, some 30. Listen, anyone who has ears. This is the gospel of the Lord.
Praise to you, Lord Jesus Christ.
Matthew goes on from there to present an explanation of the parable. And in this, he shows himself, firstly, very obedient to Mark, who first did this, but not very obedient to Jesus, because it was not the way of the parable to offer an explanation. It would be as strange to append an explanation to a parable as it would be to append an explanation to a joke, a foreign body. Parable is meant to be a pithy, sharp story which is simply delivered and left. And now you get the point or you don't. And that's the meaning of the ending line. Anyone who has ears to hear, let him hear. And with that you wash your hands of it. You don't talk about it anymore. You let it sink in. And people give it what meaning they can. And usually, and when Jesus tells a parable, he is asking for a change of heart on the part of those who offer their explanation. Now, all Mark offered for this parable was an allegory. And he directed our attention, probably till the end of time, onto the soil. The soil is the thing which keeps changing in the story. And Mark is delighted to offer us an interpretation which exploits the different fates of the seeds that fall. Birds of the air, the patches of rock, the thorns, and then forth, and therefore in a very special place, the rich soil. In spite of that, we've never ever called this the parable of the soil. We call it the parable of the sower. And I think that is right. That is what Jesus says. Imagine a sower, he says. Don't imagine lots of different sorts of soil, but imagine a sower. And if that's true, this parable is a much more democratic parable. In the explanation, Jesus is the sower, and the seed is the word. And then we get on to the subject of ourselves, and all our different ways of receiving. But if the parable is really about the sower, if we are to imagine ourselves to be sowers, then we're not just receivers of the word, but transmitters of it. bearers of it into the world. And perhaps we should imagine this parable being told not to a crowd of people, as it is set in the Gospel now, but to the group of the apostles, perhaps on their return from their first mission, tired and perhaps a bit disappointed or unnerved by the way it's been. I always think of how hard it must have been to come to a sewing class in the ancient world, where everything is depleted, running out. The spring looks uncertain, and certainly doesn't feel very promising. And to take the precious grain out into the fields and throw it must have been a heartbreaking business, particularly if you've had a bad year the harvest before. And so you have to find a very special impulse at the end of the winter, firstly of generosity. You have to really want this seed to go. And really of bravery too, just to set out, to get up on your feet and go. It requires a kind of courage, because you're throwing away the little that you have left. And I think that Jesus is telling us not to be good sowers once a year at seed time, but to cultivate those attitudes always. To be in season and out of season, ready to give our last. Ready to be prepared to blow everything for the hope that we have. It's really a parable about hope. And then what sort of state do you get into if you turn back to examine the fate of the seeds you've sown? That's another chance to break your heart. If you've ever tried to build a law, you'll know what I mean. Everything seems to go pretty well. It takes a long, long time to prepare the ground. And then you sow the seed, and you go and wash your paws, and then you go and look out at your handiwork. And from somewhere, groups of seagulls and 200 starlings have suddenly materialized and are rapidly devouring what you have so carefully prepared. And it feels absolutely broken. If you go away to recover and return after a couple of weeks, you will find dandelions like parsnips growing all over, and wonder if it will ever survive the task of being weeded, and the rest. And if you look through your time machine into your future, it may not be the best to think of all these perils. If you're a teacher, how does it feel to look at your class at the end of the year? Do you examine them with your future in your hand and say, is this game worth the candle? My experience is that people have a wonderful capacity not to do that, to trust that for all the mistakes that they make, for all the failures they experience, God's good growth will come, and it will pay for all rest. I did two funerals in the last week. One was a principal lecturer from the other place, with a tremendous career behind him, leaving school at 14, becoming a night school student, an extension college graduate, in the Arboreal College, coming out to lecture, rising himself. Highly respected arbitrator in trade union affairs, man of principles, not a great God-botherer, and I can't commend him for that, but a man whose children do him credit, and who loved his family, and they had the grace to send the church at the end, and he was reverent and deeply grateful for the sacraments. The other, a man disowned by his unmarried mother 50 years ago, was sent off to Australia for an orphanage and children work, and who lived his life hoping to go and find his parents one day, and did, and found himself unwanted, and his life seemed to fall to bits, became a bit nomadic for a long time, until in his 40s he came completely by chance to Nottingham, the carpet fitter, and met two disabled old ladies who took him in and fed him once a week and kept his head above water by teaching him to pray. And this man baptized a Catholic, totally unconnected with any church, died rather traumatically in the Queen's Medical Center last week. And the old ladies told me that they were his only friends. I thought it couldn't be true. But his funeral was attended by two old ladies and three nurses from the hospice who came out to applaud him. The seed of God grows in strange ways. Sometimes it looks very fine. It looks as if respect and honour and love and creativity are working well. Sometimes it ends with a tiny group of people, perhaps only a couple of sad people at the funeral, and a life that seems to have been unnoticed by anyone. But I do believe that the seed of God is real, and that he has his ways of assessing it, and that it is not for us ever to pass judgment on what it has achieved in any life. I don't know anything about that poor man. He had a cancer for the last 3 years, which he suffered quite alone, apart from the support he got from his two friends. Never came to cross my path after his death. But I shall remember him always as someone who was making his journey to God very near to me and unknown to me. And I know that I belong to him, and that if things had been otherwise, we might have blessed one another on our way. We should be sowing the seed generously, more generously than we do, and we should be more aware that it will produce its harvest 60, 30, but sometimes 100-fold. Let us profess our faith. We believe in one God, the Father, the Almighty, Maker.